Bytes, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show is hosted by Felicia King of Quality Plus Consulting and airs the first and third Saturdays of every month.
Good morning. You're listening to Breakfast Bytes, and I'm Felicia King. The show topic for you today is about Microsoft SQL servers. And what are SQL servers? They are database servers. So, therefore, all of the things that I'm going to tell you today are very much applicable to just about any database server that's out there. So whether it's MySQL or NoSQL, there's lots of different types of SQL out there. And I would say that the vast majority of them are not Microsoft products. It just happens to be that Microsoft SQL happens to be one of the things that's predominantly used in business. And so that is something that I see a lot and I interact with a lot. And as you know, a lot of what I try to do with the show is to talk about the practical things that I run into that are problems that people are facing, and then share with you what those solutions are so that you might be able to avoid those same problems that some other folks have had. So, first of all, what is a SQL server? It is a database server, and it is the back end of some front end application. And in order to try and relate this for you, the vast majority of websites that exist now are actually a front end back end mechanism where there is some application on the front end. It's called the CMS, the Content Management System, and the back end is some sort of SQL database. Now, that could be Microsoft SQL, it could be MySQL, it could be whatever flavor of SQL. So, even just about every website that you look at has some SQL database associated with it. That's how widespread the use of SQL is. Now, let's take some more examples. Practice management applications are all using some database. So every single medical provider out there utilizes something that has some sort of SQL backend or some other database backend like Sybase. And just about every business critical application, you know, you look at things like PeopleSoft, which is an HR management application, just about every sort of like central business application uses some sort of database. Even QuickBooks uses a database. Now, QuickBooks happens to have its own integrated database, but but QuickBooks doesn't scale as much as something like Microsoft Dynamics, as an example, or some higher-end accounting packages that would be able to really scale. So once you get to the point where you've got, oh, say, more than like 30 people who need to have access to something, you're probably looking at something that needs to have a great deal of scalability towards it. So therefore, just about every business critical application that's out there uses some sort of a database as a backend. And most of those happen to be Microsoft SQL. So I see this a lot. And there are some very well written articles that Microsoft has put out that give you a good deal of understanding about what it is that you should be doing in order to correctly spec a piece of hardware in the right way such that it can support the needs of the SQL database or multiple SQL databases on the same database server. And then make sure that based upon the way that you've implemented them that they perform correctly. Well, it's not just performance that you have to consider. It's also, we need to back up this data. We need to back it up often enough. And we need to make sure that we can recover from a wide variety of failures. And depending upon how valuable and important this database is, as well as the tolerance or lack thereof of downtime associated with connectivity to the database, then we need to put some other factors in place, such as maybe database mirroring or replication, and there are other ramifications therein. So there's a lot to the whole design element. And if you as a business owner or as an IT manager, if you are getting information from your application vendor exclusively with regards to how to design a piece of hardware or the layout for Microsoft SQL or even the installation of SQL. If you are exclusively getting information from the application vendor about those factors, I can pretty well guarantee you that your SQL Server is not going to be set up correctly. And this is because I see this all the time. And it just happens to be that in the last 2 to 3 weeks, I've literally seen like 4 broken, and I mean really, really broken, SQL servers. And they were really, really broken for all the same reasons. And the reasons could all be summarized as the people that originally designed the servers to support SQL and then installed SQL and then configured it, they really were grossly misinformed. And apparently they were too lazy to go read up on it or to do any testing or due diligence or anything. I mean, it was just really quite atrocious. So let's talk through what some of these common problems are and how you can avoid them. Because the whole point here is let's learn from other people's mistakes so that you don't fall into the same trap. So one of these, actually 3 of the phone calls that I got had to do with SQL Server out of space. And you run into situations where your SQL Server has run out of space when somebody has failed multiple ways simultaneously and the SQL Server was allowed to just go on and on and on and on and on for quite some time without any sort of interaction with somebody who had the competency to know how to look at the problem and say, that kind of looks like we might run into a problem in the future. Let's proactively address that. And actually, this is a fine example of why I find it to be so advantageous for business owners and IT managers to have relationships with consulting firms. And those relationships can come in multiple forms. I mean, you could be hiring that firm to do monitoring for you or management of certain things for you, and or you could just have regular consulting engagements with them so that you've got that relationship. But ultimately, what happens is when you have a relationship with a competent IT consulting firm, and I do qualify it as competent because I find that there's a lot of incompetency in the IT consulting arena that I'm not real pleased with. And one of the reasons that I do the show here is to try to educate you so that you can be a better consumer of IT consulting services so that you don't get taken advantage of. So that regular relationship will get that competent IT consultant involved in your systems so that they can look at what's going on with your environment and be able to proactively predict what the logical conclusion of misconfiguration is going to be and saying, okay, well, while we don't have a crisis, let's go and proactively correct these issues so that we don't have these crises. So again, now that all being said, everything that I ran into in the last 3 to 4 weeks with regards to SQL servers could have easily been avoided. So number one issue, running out of space. Why did it happen? The prime reason that it happened is because the original individuals that designed either the virtual server or the physical server or the relationship between the two that it was where it was designed to support SQL services, they didn't actually have a plan. It was all just completely slapjack, slap it up, and have no plan. And really, it was seemed to be obvious to me that they had inadequate experience installing SQL servers. So just the same as you would never install Exchange as an application on the C drive of a server, you would always install it to a separate data partition like the D drive. This is also true for SQL. The application itself should be installed to a separate partition away from the operating system. So the C drive is for the operating system. The D drive is for the SQL Server application, and then possibly database and log files and some other things as well, like backups. And that has to do with how many databases you're going to put on that SQL Server. I'm talking like a reasonably small implementation. Once you start getting into the point where you're going to put 20 databases on a SQL Server, well, now you really need to do, again, better planning. But at least you started with a plan even for your small server. Once you get to your larger server needs, you start actually taking physical disk arrays and saying, oh, I'm going to dedicate that to just log files, or I'm going to dedicate this other partition, which is associated with a physical RAID array, and I'm going to dedicate that just to the database files. So you can actually get to segmentation of the operating system, the SQL application itself, and you might put like some temp or swap files there with it. But then it may be that you need to have 2 to 3 different arrays for SQL databases, plus then one dedicated array for transaction log files. And that's kind of a higher-end SQL Server design. And again, there are guidance documents that are published that are actually very well written if you take the time to understand them and then do planning. You can be very successful with this. But what I continue to see is people don't even, they have no plan. There was no design for how many SQL databases were going to go on the SQL Server, how big they needed to be, or how big they were anticipated to grow, where were the backups going to go, how were they going to be backed up, where those backups were going to be sent so that they could be sent off-site, so that you would be mitigating the risk of the loss of those databases due to some sort of a calamity at the primary premise location. And when the SQL Server instance is installed on the C drive, and then, of course, the databases are stored on the C drive, what do you think happens? Probably the C drive runs out of space. And the thing you need to realize is that with any server operating system, this is not exclusive to Windows. This is going to be true for Linux or any other operating system. That when the operating system partition runs out of space, things don't work right. Things cease to function correctly. So if the C drive runs out of space and that's where your databases are, then your database transaction logs can't grow anymore. So you're out of space. Now your staff, they're trying to write transactions to that database through their applications, and it doesn't work. They're going to start getting error messages, and you end up with data loss. So this is actually very, very preventable. So the first thing you would do as a baseline, and I can say this is a baseline regardless of whether you've got small SQL Server or big SQL Server or anything in between. Your operating system partition needs to be adequately sized. And usually, in my opinion, that is about 200 gigabytes for Windows Server 2012. Then you would have a D drive partition. And I'm not going to get into the details of how those map through to RAID arrays. I'm just going to talk about separate partitions here. So the C drive is about 200 gigabytes. The D drive, well, you need to properly size that based upon the types of databases, the quantity, the size, the anticipated size of those databases, and the anticipated size of the backups that go along with those databases. So let's just say 500 gigabytes you're going to set up as a D drive, okay, for sake of example. And maybe you've got a reasonably small SQL Server here, and you're only going to put maybe 5 databases on it. So maybe that 2 partition where you have C drive and D drive, maybe that setup is adequate. Okay, let's go with that. So number one is you properly size the partitions. Number two, you segment logistically where things are going to go. For instance, now you're getting around to installing the SQL Server instance on this Windows 2012 server. You would need to install the actual SQL Server installation on the D drive. In this way, the logs, the error logs, now I'm not talking transaction logs for databases, but all of the logging that goes on with regards to the SQL Server instance itself, those log files are also now going to be on the D drive. So if they get large, or if somebody forgets to maintain those properly, or that the right automation is not in place in order to automate the cleanup of those, then you won't run into a situation where the C drive is out of space and then server ceases to function correctly. So then beyond that, because you installed SQL Server on the D drive, then what you end up with is a default location for databases and their corresponding transaction logs on the D drive. Yay! So again, even if somebody fails to do proper database maintenance, then you will not run into a situation where the C drive has run out of space. When the C drive runs out of space, your server ceases to function properly, and you have to do all kinds of dancing around the maypole to get things to work again. It's really something to be avoided. So, again, this D drive segmentation. Now we have the application installed on the D drive. We have databases and log files on the D drive. Now, the other thing that would default to the D drive at that point are the backups for Microsoft SQL. And this is very, very important. Most people do not understand the importance of utilizing native backups. And when I say native backups, I'm talking about Microsoft SQL-based backups, meaning you are actually using SQL Management Studio or Transact SQL to do those backups rather than some third-party application. I am really against third-party applications being utilized to back up SQL servers in the vast majority of circumstances. Once you get to a large corporate environment where you have a significant budget where you can buy something as sophisticated as AppAssure, or you start going to replicated iSCSI SAN arrays, you know, and I'm talking about things that are like $60,000 devices, okay, or way more than that. Once you start getting to that point, yes, the game changes, then you can start utilizing third-party applications. But for everybody with an environment that's smaller than that, they just don't have the resources to be able to buy the fancy pants software that is really necessary in order to correctly back up and maintain SQL databases. And no, Backup Exec is not that application. If you have a consultant who is telling you that Backup Exec is sufficient for backing up your SQL databases, I would highly suggest that you reconsider that strategy. And the reason is because every backup method that you utilize has to start with the end in mind. And the end that you have to start with is, well, I need to be able to recover the database plus the transaction log contents as quickly as possible with inside of my specified required recovery time objective, and it has to be super reliable. So, beyond that, you also need support for the strategy that you're going to utilize. If you utilize Microsoft SQL native backups, it is conceivable that you could actually get support directly from Microsoft, from any Microsoft partner consulting firm, or even your application vendor themselves. But if you've selected to utilize a third-party backup software like Backup Exec, who are you going to get support from when this thing doesn't quite back up or restore properly? And furthermore, why would you put more complexity between you having a successful restore versus, why would you put more things in there? It's just more complexity. The more complexity you have, the higher the probability of it not working when you need it to work. So let's go into this whole backups thing. This is also one of the enormous problems that I ran into over the last 3 to 4 weeks. It was just everywhere I saw people were not backing up their SQL databases properly. In one of those circumstances, the reason that things were falling flat on their face was because of the fact that somebody had tried to use a third-party backup application to back up the databases. Except the third-party backup does not do anything in terms of maintenance of the SQL databases. And this isn't just about, oh, I need to back up my stuff. It's, no, you need to actually maintain these databases if you don't want them to have corruption. And if you want the transactions and the transaction logs to be actually fully flushed and written into the database, and then you need to have special scripts to actually do maintenance on the transaction logs themselves as well. So, again, third-party backup, I just throw it right out the door. Very few circumstances do I find where third-party backup is the appropriate choice. And even beyond that, you would still need to be able to be doing database maintenance utilizing SQL Management Studio native functions. Now, Microsoft makes this pretty easy for you. If you were to go into SQL Management Studio and create a maintenance plan, this is not something you're going to do when you haven't read any articles about it. You do need to actually go and read up on this. These are complex topics, so you need to go read up on it. However, you don't have to become master of Transact SQL in order to get this to work. You can go read some articles, go through a maintenance plan, and get it set up. So, set up your maintenance plan, and the maintenance plan should do things like reindexing, freeing up unused space, doing integrity checking to make sure that you don't have corruption in the database. It should be doing a full backup of the database. Please note, you cannot back up the database and the transaction log at the same time. Now, I'm not going to go into all the details necessarily of when you're going to choose to do different types of transaction log backups, because that's really getting into the weeds here, but that is something you should consider as well, depending upon the recovery needs of your business critical application databases. And again, there are articles that you can look up to learn how to do that. Specifically, if you were to look for articles that talk about like SQL Server best practices or tips for effective SQL Server database maintenance, you can look up things on those keywords and you will likely find the correct articles. Now, the final big matzo ball issue that I was running into is beyond people not installing these servers correctly so that they were running out of space, and then also they were not doing database maintenance plans, so their databases were not getting properly backed up and maintained. But the transaction logs were also not being maintained. And what happens is, even if you have good database backups, so you could be backing up nightly, if you don't do log truncation afterwards, you won't end up recovering any free space that's in those transaction logs. So think about it this way. A transaction log is a file that gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger as needed. And that's what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to just get bigger so that it can keep track of all of these changes that have been specified to be written to the database. Then when a backup occurs, the database backup process grabs those unwritten transactions that are only in the transaction log, and it flushes them and puts them into the database. Now what you should have at that time is a transaction log that has much less data in it. So if you think about it in terms of a 5-gallon bucket, throughout the day, or I should say throughout the week, that bucket is getting fuller and fuller and fuller. Now each time that database backup is performed, then the items in the bucket are released, they are flushed into the database. But the fill level in the bucket does not go down. So there's still water in there. It's just like the sedimentation. It's kind of like if you had a 5-gallon bucket and you put water in it as you needed to, but then you put sedimentation in the water and then you removed the sedimentation from the water. So the water fill level is still there. So even if this backup runs and it takes all that sedimentation out of the water, that water level is still in there. And this is now free space in the transaction log. So that free space is not yet relinquished. So you might end up with an enormous transaction log file on your server. This enormous transaction log file has a bunch of free space in it. The problem is you can't just go and delete this transaction log file and say, oh, well, I know it's got free space in it, so I'm just going to whack it, because it's not really a temp file. You can't just go and manually clean it up like that. You actually have to clean it up utilizing correct processes. And the easiest way to do that is to use some Transact SQL code that uses truncation. And that truncation flips the database into simple recovery mode temporarily, and I tend to do this like once every Saturday, and it flips this into a simple recovery mode, the database. Then it interrogates and determines exactly where that log file is or what that log file is on a per database basis. Then it truncates all of that free space and it says, oh, let's relinquish that. So I've literally had situations, and I'm not exaggerating, I've literally had situations in the last 3 weeks where a 95 gigabyte transaction log file shrunk to 768 kilobytes. Now that's kilobytes versus gigabytes. So a 95 gigabyte file is effectively equivalent to like grossly in excess of like 9.5 million kilobytes. So you can see huge amount of space was freed up and given back to the operating system on that disk, on that hard drive of that server or that disk array, simply because proper maintenance was being done. I had a client who specifically was in a frenzy because their server was running out of space. This was a new client, obviously. And I said, okay, well, you know, we're going to do these things manually here, and then what we're going to do is have this database maintenance plan in place, and then we're going to have the truncator script in place for Saturday. And then what had happened is that over the weekend, these things happened, and let me reiterate that the database maintenance plan and the full database backup occurs at least once a day. And if your business is 5 days a week, then it's going to be for every 5 days. If you're running a 6-day-a-week business, then you need to back up once every 6 days. But anyways, you're doing the full database maintenance plus the transaction log truncator, and magically they got about 95 gigabytes of disk space back over the weekend. And that's exactly what you want to have happen, except you don't want it to ever get to the point where you've got some 95 gigabyte file that you need to clean up. It should never get that bad if you're doing things properly. So I hope this has been some useful information for you, and I wish you the best of luck.